I'd like to call this December 1st, 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8:02. Ms. Becker, would you call roll?
Yes. Dr. Mastouras?
Present.
Dr. Cohen?
Present.
Dr. Carpenter? Did he ever log on? Okay. Noted absent. Dr. Brown?
Present.
Public member Diva Galan?
Present.
And Sami Hamed?
Present.
Assistant Attorney General Mona Baskin?
Oh my gosh, where's Mona?
I'm looking through the attendees.
She's noted absent for the moment. I'll follow up with her.
Okay, noted absent. Executive Director Margaret Whelan?
Present.
And Fawn Becker?
Present.
Okay.
Dr. Moffitt?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, also. I'm sorry. I always produce that. And okay. Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
And we have quorum.
Thank you. So agenda item C, board purpose statement. I'm going to read for the meeting. The board meeting statement of purpose, a license to practice optometry in the state, is a privilege granted by the Arizona Legislature for the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. I'm hearing some background noise, so just want to remind everyone to please keep your microphones muted unless you're speaking. Agenda item D, declaration of conflicts of interest, if any, for this meeting. Are there any conflicts of interest to declare? I see none from the board members. I also have none. President's report, agenda item E. I thought I would mention that I spoke on behalf of the board at the Fall Congress business meeting of the AZOA in Sedona a few weeks ago. Margaret prepared a really nice slideshow presentation and an update on the board business, including our recent audit. Also, the board members, their terms, functions of the boards were discussed, as well as complaints, particulars of what we see a fair amount on the board. In particular, one of the concerns and the raised needs that we wanted to convey at this meeting were to discuss our need for effective lobbying for the state board and to request shared lobbying services with the AZOA if possible. And then we'll move on. Is Dr. Mock here, Margaret? I don't see him.
Madam President, I don't see him either. I'm texting him to see if he's still joining us, but we can move forward.
Okay, I'll do that. And then we'll come back to Dr. Mock when we can. So we'll skip ahead in the agenda to agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews and complaints. I see Dr. Perkins is here, and I believe counsel also, Megan Gailey, you're counsel for Dr. Perkins, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. So, and then is also patient TC present? You're muted right now, patient TC.
He was here, is he still?
I can see there, I see. Okay. Yeah, you're still muted. We'll just give you a minute to figure that out, okay?
There we go. Sorry, I'm here. I'm present.
Great. Okay, so we'll start with Joshua Perkins, IR number 202406. Okay. And then we'll start with a board summary. Would one of the board members like to offer a summary?
Oh, excuse me, Madam President. I apologize. I would like the record to reflect Ms. Mona Baskin has joined the meeting, I believe at 8:05 or 8:04.
Thank you. Okay, board summary, one of the board members.
Dr. Brown. Patient TC complains that he only wanted an examination to determine his candidacy for LASIK. Dr. Perkins' attorney explains that when this scheduling mix-up was discovered at the beginning of Dr. Perkins' exam, quote, Dr. Perkins apologized for the inconvenience and miscommunication, informed patient TC that this was not the correct clinic for LASIK consultations, and offered to have the front desk staff schedule a LASIK consultation at the Scottsdale location. Dr. Perkins then asked the patient if he wanted to continue with the examination, which TC agreed to.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. At this time, patient TC, if you would, and let me reverse for just a moment. Anytime we're discussing complaints, will all of those in attendance please preface their comments with their name so that everyone on the record knows who's speaking? And when referring to a patient, we use initials only. Okay. And so patient TC, this is your opportunity. If you would like to explain what happened or offer your comments to the board, please do so now.
Yeah, absolutely. I was under the assumption that I was attending a complementary LASIK evaluation. When Dr. Perkins told me that they do not do that at that location, I asked if they could use the information from the evaluation that he was doing at the other location. He said he would note it in the file if I wanted to continue. I said, let's go ahead and see if they'll accept that. I was not presented with any estimate of charges that would have come because I was under the assumption that it was a complimentary evaluation. And that was why I consented to proceed.
Okay. Does that conclude your comments?
It does.
All right. Thank you. So at this time, if respondent or respondent's counsel would like to summarize your views, this is your opportunity.
I would, Your Honor. Oh, sorry. I've been in court all week and I apologize. Yeah, no. Thank you, Madam President and board members. I think the summary presented by Dr. Brown clearly sets forth Dr. Perkins' position with respect to this patient. There's no question in looking through the records that we provided to the board that the patient was aware that Dr. Perkins does not perform LASIK evaluations and that the examination he was going to perform is the normal annual evaluation that Dr. Perkins performs. It's set forth in the records, and it's unfortunate that there was a scheduling miscommunication between the central scheduling and the patient. And if Dr. Perkins had been made aware that anything could have been done to further transfer the information, if the patient decided to go and have the full LASIK exam, he would have done that. Once the patient voiced complaints to the office, it became a billing issue and went through the billing department. And at no time after that, until the complaint was raised, did Dr. Perkins have any awareness that there was a continuing issue with respect to this patient. Dr. Perkins is here and available to answer any questions, as well as I am happy to answer any questions the board may have regarding this complaint. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So this will conclude open discussion, and now the board will discuss amongst the members then this case. Any board members like to start the conversation?
This is Dr. Mestores. If possible, I'd like to ask patient TC if he intends to get LASIK after having the two different visits over the last 3 years.
I did. I went with a competitor.
You're muted, Dr. Mestores.
Thank you. That concludes my questions.
Any other comments regarding this complaint?
Dr. Brown here. I would like to ask Dr. Perkins what his recollection of the exchange was, if that's possible.
Yes, sir. This is Josh Perkins. My recollection of the exchange was the patient came in. I first became aware that he was here for only a LASIK consult once he was in my chair. And so I did offer, I let him know that this was not the LASIK center, that I only provide medical exams, that we could cancel the appointment and reschedule him in our LASIK office. And the patient elected to proceed with the medical exam.
Thank you.
Dr. Moffitt, Dr. Cohen, if Dr. Perkins, is, even though your name is in the title, is it, are you a principal owner of the practice?
Doctor, I have no ownership and I have never invested into this company. I am only an employee here, despite other assumptions that may be made.
Well, thank you, Dr. Perkins. It sounds like there was a miscommunication first in the scheduling, which is no fault of patient TC, and but it also sounds as if there was a miscommunication perhaps about proceeding with an exam, that that would be treated as a regular patient, which means billing insurance or fee-for-service. But I see, I fail to see that there's been any possible violation of the statutes done by Dr. Perkins in this situation.
Thank you.
Particularly since he is not a principal owner of the practice and responsible for anything that happens outside the exam room.
I'll offer my comments here also, just for the patient's benefit and then also Dr. Perkins' benefit. The board, in this case, patient TC, we are unable to regulate fees, just so that you know that. So we can't mandate how this is handled or anything along those lines, just if Dr. Perkins handled it in an inappropriate manner. In most offices, and I would bet in Dr. Perkins' office, he would probably like to go back and just refund that exam and make the whole issue go away. That is how most of us would handle a concern like this, but the board can't mandate that in this scenario. So we are left to decide, is there a violation of the statutes or is there not? And in this case, although there was miscommunication, and really it sounds like to no fault of your own, although you did consent to go forward with the exam, it's also no fault of Dr. Perkins. And so it looks like we are rendered moot here, that there is no violation of the statutes. That's my opinion on the matter. I'd also like to ask Ms. Galan for her thoughts.
Yeah, I am completely on the same page with that. I agree. I don't think there was any violation as far as disciplinary. I do have concerns. I don't know if this is the first time this has happened at the practice. I don't know what we can do about that. If there's, you know, if we can just maybe send a letter or something to the practice, letting them know their scheduling maybe needs to be looked at or something. But that has something to do with Dr. Perkins. I don't know. And I don't know if we have the authority to do that. It's just a thought that hopefully this is not going on with other patients as well. And that this is, you know, a one time kind of thing that's going on there. And they're being trained properly, I guess, in scheduling and all that.
Yeah, I would say also my impression is this is a business complaint and that there are avenues to pursue that towards the business. But our purview is the licensees. And so I think I made my thoughts clear on that. Mr. Hamed, any comments here?
I do agree with the comments that have been made so far, that it was just a miscommunication and TC knew when they accepted to do that, the fee for service basically. Therefore, I do agree that it should be dismissed.
Would anyone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Brown. I'd move that we dismiss this complaint as there is no violation of the Optometry Practice Act.
This is Sammy Hamed. I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion to dismiss the complaint and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Thank you, patient TC. I'll move forward now to...
Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Let me just see here. I'm looking who's in attendance here for a moment. So I'm going to move forward to, I don't see Dr. Lewis in attendance. Just making sure. Okay. So I'm going to move forward to agenda item G3, Dr. Bailey Yee, IR number 202408. Is patient GR present? Okay. And counsel present? Dr. Yee, I believe, is present.
Yes, he is present.
Okay. I see your name there, Dr. Yee, but your microphone is muted in case you're trying to speak to us. Nope. Okay. So, agenda item G3, Bailey Yee, IR number 202408. Would someone on the board like to offer a summary, please?
This is Dr. Mastaris. So patient GB, GR, I'm so sorry. Patient GR had cataract surgery with the surgeons in the group practice that Dr. Yee is in. Dr. Yee saw the patient 5 times. After the patient had cataract surgery, they wanted a prescription for glasses. But that was never completed. A refraction was never completed at any of the eye exams. They explained to the patient that she'd have to pay a $52 charge for a refraction or see an outside provider that accepted her EyeMed insurance. Patient went round and round discussing it with the staff there. Never received a prescription or had a refraction and didn't go out to, I don't think she went to an outside provider. That had to do with insurance and medical versus refractive. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Mastaris. Dr. Yee, would you like to address the board regarding this complaint? Okay, so I hear no response. Then I'm going to move this forward to board discussion. Would anyone on the board like to open up discussion on this complaint? I'll start. I'll discuss my thoughts here. So patient YR was seen for postoperative care. Just for the record, I think these things are important to state. In postoperative care, you may do a refraction on the eye to see the best corrected visual acuity, but it's not a stable refraction. It's actually not something that you would prescribe for the patient to wear. So that had been performed on the patient's behalf on each surgical eye alone. Also, a glasses prescription was never generated. It looks like from the record, it was pretty clearly explained to the patient that through her medical insurance, there is no coverage for a refraction. And so a refraction would be an out-of-pocket expense if the patient had that procedure done in their office. The patient did have EyeMed, which is a vision plan, and she could use her vision plan to obtain a refraction and a glasses prescription without paying an additional fee for it, but she had to use a contracted provider. It looks like the patient also contacted or read about the FTC rule that you can't charge for a prescription, but a refraction is not a covered service, and you can charge for a refraction. So in this case, there seems to be no violation of the Optometric Practice Act as far as I can see. I'm going to ask Dr. Cohen for his thoughts next.
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. That was a part that I think there was a misunderstanding with the terminology is of can't charge for a prescription is not the change. That means you can't charge to physically give a patient a copy of their prescription if it's been done. But the process in obtaining the prescription is the legitimate charge. And I felt see how Dr. Yee has violated any of the statutes here.
Thank you. Dr. Brown, I'll ask for your thoughts.
I agree with Dr. Brown. I agree with everything that's been said. The only thought I had was the patient could be let known that she can have the patient GR can have a copy of their records if they would like. But yeah, but I agree. There's been no violation.
Thank you. And Dr. Mastores, any comments here?
Dr. Mastores here. I agree with everything.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comments.
Ms. Galan?
No, I agree with everything that's been said.
Okay. Would anyone like to offer a motion here?
Dr. Brown, I move that we dismiss this complaint as there's no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Dr. Mastores, I second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Yi as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Great. Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. We'll move on to Dr. Carolyn Martin's case, IR number 202409. Is patient SH present? Counsel for Dr. Martin present? Okay. Dr. Martin, I see you there. You're present?
Yes.
So let's have a board summary if we can in this case from the board members.
Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
Patient SH complains that she was referred to Dr. Chang for cataract surgery by Dr. Martin without being notified that Dr. Chang and Dr. Martin were married. Dr. Martin replies with Dr. Chang's credentials, claiming him to be the most qualified surgeon in the area.
Thank you. Does that conclude your summary?
That does.
All right, so Dr. Martin, if you would like to take this opportunity to address the board.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you all for your time this morning. In the Verde Valley, the Sedona-Cottonwood Camp Verde area, we have very limited access to ophthalmology. There's only two that live here locally. I delivered ethical care to the patient, including my disclosures. The patient had actually already seen the other local ophthalmologist for possible cataract surgery, and he had come to me because he did not particularly care for that ophthalmologist. So by default, if nothing else, Dr. Chang was next on the list. When the patient, quote, remembered that there was this relationship, he did come to the office, ask my front desk for us to refer him to someone else. And there is a visiting MD that comes out of Flagstaff. And so we referred him to this particular doctor up in Flagstaff.
Okay, does this summarize your comments or complete
yes.
your comments? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So then I'll open this up for board discussion. Any comments from the board members?
This is Dr. Brown. This was an interesting case for me, and I did a lot of research. I didn't see any violation of our practice act, but I found an AMA code of medical ethics that kind of applies here. And what it refers to is a physician self-referral. And a physician self-referral is a referral that may, that does benefit you financially. We're in a community property state. And so when you do make a self-referral, it's recommended that you make a disclosure of that relationship. I don't see a violation of our act, but I found it interesting that there is ethical codes out there that kind of address this. Mm-hmm. That concludes my comments.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Bastaris. Dr. Martin, have you run into this prior?
No, because I do disclose this relationship. And because we're in a small town, frankly, a lot of times when I suggest that we're going to use Dr. Chang, a lot of the patients say, oh, yeah, he's your husband, right? Mm-hmm. So it's often a very casual and friendly conversation. And it's also important to note that because Dr. Chang works for Southwestern Eye Center, those doctors, and I know because I worked there also, are employees. And so the other local ophthalmologist is a independent ophthalmologist. And so certainly if I was married to him, there absolutely would be a financial issue because he would own the practice. But Dr. Chang is an employee of Southwestern Eye Center. So there is a potential.
Small town life.
Yep.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Brown. I've got a quick follow-up question to those comments.
Sure.
My understanding from working next door to Southwest is there's incentives for production at Southwest for employees.
They are paid based on Southwestern has a base salary. And then depending on like what, you know, how many complete exams you do, that sort of thing, you are also paid in an RVU status. So, but you are paid salary.
But there's a productivity bonus, correct?
Yes, correct. If you meet a certain level, yep. And then beyond that, then you get productivity.
So that would be the financial benefit referred to in the self-referral. Again, I'm not finding a violation of our act, but the inference. Thank you.
Sure, of course.
I have a couple of issues that I would raise. And one, when you're married to someone and you refer to them, obviously their income is shared with you. And so there's a financial relationship. It appears to me that it would be best practice to have a form in your office that also declares the relationship, even if you simply check a box that you discuss this with the patient and you made the patient aware. Do you have any such form?
I don't.
Okay. So I think that that's one thing that you should consider.
Sure.
Also, I would like to bring up something that I noticed about this case. And for now, I'm discussing this with the other board members. But this visit, which was essentially a comprehensive eye exam, was billed as a level 5, an E&M level 5. And this looks grossly inappropriate to me. I'm going to walk through what billing on an E&M level 5 looks like just to remind everybody of what that needs to be. In the HPI, you have to have 4 or more qualifying factors that you discuss. In this case, I'll say the very first comment, the chief complaint, there are 2 factors discussed. They were trouble seeing street signs and the right eye worse than the left. That was it. So right out of the gate, we've missed the boat. However, to bill for an E&M level 5, this is, although you marked these boxes, Dr. Martin, that doesn't mean that the exam qualifies for this. What you did looks to me like a comprehensive eye exam. Although you marked high risk, extensive time, that kind of thing, there's nothing high risk about a patient with 20/40 cataracts. You're not the surgeon. You're not determining the surgery that's going to be done. And cataract surgery is not high risk. A high risk surgery is your patient that comes in with a retinal detachment and you have to decide what needs to be done and they need emergent or urgent surgery, a penetrating globe injury, a corneal ulcer that is ruptured. These are patients that have to immediately be taken into surgery, and there's high risk to the eye, high risk for blindness, high risk for the surgeon, high risk surgery. There is nothing about this exam that qualifies, in my opinion, as high risk. I see this patient all day long, every day. So on E&M level 5, this looks like very inappropriate coding and billing to me. So I would like to raise that as an issue here. And I'll give you an opportunity to respond if you would like to.
You, according to the new guidelines, previously, and I can't remember the year, it was, I want to say 2021, the new guidelines came out and they actually changed that risk definition that it's, and it, which in fact kind of works against us, that it's no longer threat to, organ or life, that it's talking about, going to surgery. And so I follow that guideline based on, I use Revolution EHR and they're very clear when you select that, if you talk about it. And I do, having co-managed for a very long time with surgery, I do talk about the risks of surgery, including, you know, risk, you know, 1 in 10,000 risk of endophthalmitis, that sort of thing, retinal detachment. I would, you know, certainly, you know, reconsider and restudy those as well. But again, we spent well over 20 minutes talking about surgery, the anesthesia, very, very detailed conversation.
Sure. I understand all of that and I appreciate it. And I think that's good care. But in this instance, also, you're not the surgeon doing the surgery. And so the surgeon is going to have that conversation and all of that with the patient. And it's, I think, great to discuss it, but I don't think it qualifies as high risk. I think you would have a very difficult argument on your hand if you had an audit with Medicare over a level 5, essentially comprehensive eye exam, discussing a elective cataract surgery with 20/40 vision. The patient could wait. They don't even have to do surgery under those instances. I have lots of 20/40 patients who decide to defer and wait. So I have a concern about that. I'd like to kick this back to the board members with that in mind and see if they share my concerns or have any other thoughts about this.
This is Dr. Mishoris. I'm no billing expert, but what I understand is that the rules are different than they used to be. And that time is of essence at this point. It is more important than risk even. So I know there are many doctors who, bill level 5s because of time. So that's just my comment.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, comments?
Yes. In the, a question for Dr. Martin, in Revolution, does it send an alert? Sometimes I know in some of the EHRs, it'll pop up an alert if you have not met the qualifications of a certain billing level. Does your system provide that?
It does not, but it does have an informational, like every time you choose on the management, the risk level, the diagnosis, that sort of thing, it has guidelines right there.
Thank you. And one other question, when you say that with this patient, you did your disclosures, am I correct? That yes. Included the surgeon is your husband?
Yes, that is correct. In fact, that conversation became very personal because the patient is a mountain biker and so is Dr. Chang. And so we were actually having a conversation about how they would get along beautifully because they shared the same passion. So.
Did the patient at that time, besides talking about the biking relationship, express any concern about the fact that you're making a referral to your husband?
Not at all.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martin. I think with the billing issue, I think we all have to be very, very careful with that. It doesn't sound as if to me anything was done intentionally to do that, but I agree with Dr. Moffitt that it's very critical that we adhere to it and could justify anything we do charge to get that clarified, but I failed to see any violation here.
Thank you.
Dr. Brown, comments?
I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Galan, comments?
I mean, whether we find, you know, depending on what the board decides, if there's a violation here or not, I do have issue just generally, and I'd just like to bring it up with there needs to be some clarity that this is your husband. I do think that regardless if it's a violation of the act or not, there's an ethical, and it should be coming from both sides. It should be reiterated when they get there that this is, you know, this is my wife that sent you here. I just want to make you aware of that. And I hope that you're comfortable with that. And it should be coming from both sides. It should be, something that people are, it should be well known. And I just, I find that a little bit problematic. Even just hearing like when you kind of started speaking in the beginning and just telling us kind of what happened, you didn't seem to think there was any kind of ethical concerns with that. And I just want to point out that maybe it's something you don't, haven't thought about, but other people when they hear that do find ethical concerns. And it's just something that you should definitely be aware of, regardless of what the board decides. And we'll see in a few minutes what that is, but that's kind of just my thoughts on it.
Dr. Moffitt, this is Dr. Cohen again. I agree with what Ms. Gawan is saying. I also heartily agree with the comment that you had made. Dr. Martin, if I were in your situation and faced this, by lunchtime today, I would have a form made in my office that expresses that conflict in writing and make sure that that's cleared before a patient, any referral occurs. I think it's an excellent idea and a great way to be able to prevent any appearance of impropriety.
Mr. Hamed, do you have any comments?
I have no comments.
So in this instance, I would like to issue a letter of concern regarding the lack of support for the exam that was billed. This is non-disciplinary, Dr. Martin, but it does go on the record that we had this conversation about the billing. I also feel that there is at least a suggestion of an ethical concern, although no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. So I would like to offer a motion to dismiss with a letter of concern that states those two issues. Is there a second?
Madam President, yes. Members of the board, it's either or. We don't dismiss and do a letter of concern.
You would do
the letter of concern for lack of support for the exam level build, or you can dismiss.
Madam Chair,
this is Sami Hamed. I think the message is getting to Dr. Martin pretty clear. I hope so to do that. So I think it would be fine if dismissing it, but let this proceeding, she should take note of this proceeding as a result, not to do that again.
Okay. So I'm still suggesting that we issue a letter of concern. I'd like to see if there's support for that.
Actually, Madam President, if you would just go ahead and make the motion, see if you can get a second. If you do not get a second, the motion will die for lack of a second. Or if you do get a second, you can have further discussion if need be, and then the board will vote on that motion. Should it die, you can ask for another motion to dismiss or other at that time.
I'll restate my motion. I'd like to make a motion to issue a letter of concern regarding the level of exam billing that was performed here and lack of support for that level of billing. In addition, there is an ethical concern that patient is referring to her own husband and that should be disclosed. Is there a second?
This is Diva Galan, and I would second that letter of concern.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Galan. So we will vote now. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Madam President?
Yes, Dr. Brown.
Can we have just a moment of discussion?
Yes.
Thank you. So as far as the billing goes, I'm not boned up on it well enough to vote on that part. I would be happy to research it and vote, but I would probably abstain from that section of it because I don't know the answer. And I apologize for that.
If this helps you, I can say this, that HPI in the level 5 has to have 4 modifying factors, and there are 2. Okay. You can look.
Dr. Moffitt, they changed that. That's been changed. HPIs don't matter anymore. It's time. And they changed it. I think it was 2020, 2021, or maybe late 20.
I just looked it up. So I did look it up when I was looking into this because
I don't know about that. I mean, that was all I've ever been trained on is HBI, HBI, HBI. And now it like disappeared. It's like, I don't know. I do think we don't know enough or
okay.
I think we should table it maybe.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Mastoris, what is the resource where you had your information and Dr. Moffitt, what is your resource? I think that would be helpful. The last thing before you answer that, Dr. Brown, unfortunately you cannot abstain at this point in time because you participated in the discussion. So whatever happens, just keep that in mind.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Mastoris and Madam
I would have to look it up, but I usually go by the CMS. Yeah, the Medicare.
EMM level 5 for Medicare because this is who filled this. Yeah.
Okay, so you both have the same resource where you have researched this information. It sounds like.
I mean, I don't know if this is a suggestion to just to chime in here. We can offer a letter of concern for the lack of transparency that this case brought forward, and possibly, I mean, if we wanted to amend the motion, and maybe open a new complaint for the billing, and we can evaluate that and see if it's something that should be dismissed or followed up on at maybe a following board meeting. I don't know if that's worth doing because, again, I would agree. I don't know enough about the billing to practices to.
I think that's a fair suggestion. So then it sounds like we have consent that we amend the motion.
No.
No, Ms. Baskin.
I'm sorry.
There you are.
Yes, I'm sorry. My Zoom is not working, and I have been unable to unmute myself. So I apologize for injecting like that. But I think there you can't really bifurcate it. You have everything before you right now to resolve before the doctor, both portions of it. So if you wanted to, you could just completely table everything. Come back to the next board meeting with the additional information, and that would give Dr. Martin also the opportunity to present whatever information she relied on to go ahead and resolve the matter today.
Well, can't I, Mona, withdraw the motion and restate
sure.
it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then the second, Ms. Galan would also have to withdraw her second.
Okay.
Shut the meeting down. You were being hacked. Shut the meeting down. You were.
Yeah. So I will withdraw my motion for a letter of concern.
Fucking meeting down. I'll hack your bitch.
Whoever is Mr. Yale, your background noise is breaking through the meeting there.
This is a background, and I'm telling you, if you don't shut the meeting down, you will be hacked. I'm not playing. You kick me, I'll just rejoin. Shut the meeting down. You are being hacked. I know where you.
Margaret, do you hear that? You're on mute.
If you kick me, I'll just rejoin, and I'll hack you. I'll find your address. I know you.
I'm muting, but I will try and remove from the meeting.
Shut the meeting down. You're being hacked. Remove me, and I'll disjoin.
Okay. I believe I fixed that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I've never experienced that before. I don't know what that was, but obviously there's an issue. Okay, go on, Ms. So Dr. Moffitt, you withdrew your...
I'll withdraw my motion for a letter of concern.
Ms. Galan, do you withdraw your second?
I withdraw my second.
So I'll restate my motion then. I would move that we issue a letter of concern regarding an ethical conflict referring to your husband without making it clear to the patient in writing. Is there a second?
I will second it. This is Diva Galan.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Okay. So we'll vote. We have a motion and a second to issue a letter of concern regarding an ethical.
What did I tell you? Don't shut the meeting down. I don't care. I know you live.
Somebody has hacked our meeting, apparently. I don't think this is a real person. I'm not really sure, so apologies.
Should we reissue a new call-in number?
Gary.
I think we might have to. That is unbelievable. I've never had that before. Well, I did report it to Zoom, so I thought it would cut them off, but we'll see. Nope, they're there.
Let's finish and vote on our motion here real quick so we can.
Okay, so I'm sorry. The letter of concern was for?
For an ethical conflict of interest referring to her husband.
Without disclosure.
Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ms. Galan, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Nay.
Dr. Mastoras?
Nay.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-2. All right. So Margaret, do we want to conclude here and then reissue?
Great. Yes, let me.
Ms. Whalen, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. I would have concerns if we reissue a new login, whether or not that would constitute compliance with the open meeting law as far as giving the public notice 24 hours in advance, unless it was the same login and we just all re-login.
How do you
okay.
suggest we move forward then, Ms. Baskin?
Then stay on top of it.
Yeah. Then we'd have to just end the meeting and reschedule it. Because if there was a new login, we would individuals that wanted to access the meeting would not have that notice within the 24 hours in advance. So, I've never experienced this this situation before. And I don't know if this should be to ADOA.
Stop trying to kick me, guys.
Gosh. Creepy.
Okay.
Maybe we all log out and then I'll log back in. Same meeting though.
Yeah, we could all just take a break and then I'll try to log back in.
Okay.
But it would have to be through the same login information.
What would you like to do, Madam Chair?
We can try that.
Should the police be notified that somebody is attempting to disturb a public meeting like this, in this way?
I do have a reporting mechanism through Zoom, so I'm doing that, but I will let security know. I don't know what else I can do. It is recorded, so I can send the recording after the meeting. I think that would be my only other...
Whenever I've worked for other boards and things, when somebody's made any kind of threat, they've reported it to the police. I don't know. In this case.
Okay. Ms. Whalen, could you contact somebody at ADOA and report this?
Yes, I will do that. Madam President, are we taking maybe like a 5-minute break to log back on?
Yes.
Yeah, and Ms. Whalen, Dr. Moffitt, I will also check with the AG's office regarding this.
Thank you. How about 901?
Sounds good.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we will reconvene this December 1st, 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry at 9:09. I think we'll move now to agenda item G2, Dr. James Lewis.
Wait, Dr. Moffitt, this is Dr. Cohen. Quick question. Is that full disposition then of the prior case? Is there anything that's going to be looked at as far as billing, or that's where we stand?
As far as I'm concerned, we left it because we were sort of unresolved on the issue. I did take a minute and look something up for the E&M, and I'll read it to the group real quick if that's okay to do.
Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. The matter has been concluded. So it would be with the doctor is the board voted. So the matter has been concluded.
I understand. I'm just for the board's information on the E&M codes, and this is from the January 1, 2021. This is from the Medicare site that it says the critical medical decision-making component is comprised of three different components. One, the number and complexity of problems addressed at the encounter. to the number and complexity of addressed, 2, the amount and or complexity of data to be reviewed and analyzed, and 3, the risk of complications and or morbidity or mortality of patient management. So I brought that up because, of course, if you're billing the highest level, you're engaging with all three of those components, right? Morbidity, mortality, risk, complexity, number of issues. So that's all I'll say on the matter. We'll move forward. Okay, so agenda item G2, James Lewis, IR number 202407. Is patient GB present? Okay. Counsel for Dr. Lewis? All right. And then Dr. Lewis himself. Okay. Can I get a board summary, please, for Dr. Lewis's case? Dr. Mastoros, I'm going to ask if you would please offer a board summary.
You got it. Okay. Patient GB came in to see Dr. Lewis with a complaint of nighttime glare, blurry vision, driving at night. He was prescribed glasses. He filled them. He was not able to see any better. So he came back and they rechecked the prescription. The doctor reissued a new prescription. The patient got the glasses. They were having the same issue. They contacted the optical. The optical told him to continue to try the glasses for 6 months. The patient did that, called back in about 8 months, and was told that now it's too late. There was a little bit of a discussion about insurance in there that the patient and doctor may or may not have discussed. I think the patient is just feeling that they still are not seeing well at night with the glasses.
Okay, thank you. As the respondent is not here, I'll just open this up for board discussion. Comments from the board?
Yeah, this is Dr. Cohen. One of the concerns I had in this is if indeed it's true, is the 6 month period to try glasses. I can tell you that most of the lives we deal with looking at perhaps 90 days. And when I say to patients, I suggest we go give it about 2 weeks to see if you're comfortable. Any concerns beyond that to let me know. 6 months is a very long time, particularly if that then exceeds any warranty period to redo it.
I agree. And I think it was, from the way I understood the case read, I felt like it was the optician who told the patient to give 6 months. I couldn't tell if it actually came from the doctor in this case or not. But if you look at the refraction or the prescription is written for like a plus a quarter minus 50 in both eyes. And this is a 24-year-old. So this is, I thought maybe there's some cataract involved. There's something else here that's causing these symptoms. This is a young patient. And this is an inconsequential nothing prescription. And so I'm not really sure why it was offered to begin with. This would in no way, in my opinion, I would never offer this as a solution. This is going to help with your glare. I understand that sometimes we have the conversation like, well, I don't think this will help, but if you want it, you can go get it, right? So there's always that. But with such a little prescription, by the time you put a piece of plastic in front of each eye, you've degraded any help that you're going to offer with that prescription. So to me, this looks very odd, I guess, at best, that this prescription was offered. I feel like there must be other motivations for it, but I can't say that for sure. But it's a strange minimalist prescription to offer. I would never expect that it's going to help with this patient's complaints.
Yeah, then, Dr. Bob.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Cohen.
This is Dr. Cohen. I agree entirely that one of the things struck me is that if in the absence of unusual cataracts in a 24-year-old, one of the things become more prevalent even in younger people are dry eyes that could have accounted for it. So I might show the patient the prescription and say, do you notice a difference here? Does it seem to be significant enough that you'd benefit by showing that versus no prescription? But boy, with those complaints in the absence, that I'd be at least looking for underlying dry eye issues.
Right. I agree. There's something else, maybe it's just large pupils. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't seem like it's refractive in nature. To me, that seems like an odd recommendation. And then the 6 month, anyone making a 6 month recommendation for adaptation knows that those glasses will be out of warranty when that patient comes back. So I think that this is unfortunate on the patient's behalf. I think this whole situation is.
This is Dr. Mastroes. I did see like in the history that said dry eye, but then it wasn't like addressed. So that was my initial thought too, is this might just be some dry eye issues.
Other comments from the board, Dr. Brown?
Whenever I have, Dr. Brown here, whenever I have that low of a prescription, I always write optional on the prescription and let them know that it won't affect their insurance, but it does let them know that I've had that conversation. I'm disappointed to not have either one of them here because Dr. Lewis's response did not specifically address whether there had been a 6 month recommendation or not. And I would have liked to have asked that question. That seems lengthy, something we don't do. And so I was interested in knowing that. The patient, had an interesting comment that if she would have known there was a 60 day policy, she would have been back on day 59. Yet after being told to come back for a 6 month follow up, she waited till 8 months. So I don't know what to make of this situation without both of them here to question further. So I don't know what to say.
Thank you, Ms. Galan. Any comments?
I don't have any comments. I'm just listening right now.
Okay, Mr. Hamed.
Yeah. No comment.
Yeah, Dr. Ruff, this is Dr. Cohen. This is one of the grayest cases I've seen in a while because the dry eye issue is brought up in the history, but there's no subsequent disposition or testing related to that. And we don't know who made the comment about 6 months. So if it had been the doctor, knowing it's a 60-day issue, we're not dealing with billing here. We're dealing with communication to a patient. The concern might be higher, but we can't state, as you pointed out, maybe it's the optician that made that comment. But there are too many question marks, I feel, here to be able to come up with it, and things that aren't definitively violations, like the potential dry eye issue. But it's none of it is addressed. And as Dr. Brown said, there's nobody to ask right now.
I agree. So I think in this case, I agree with the patient. This looks a little suspect, but I see no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Madam President?
Yes.
If I may, members of the board, if the board does not feel like they have enough evidence or information to make a decision, we can certainly table it, and the board can direct staff to either get a more detailed explanation from the doctor, or the board could also move it to informal interview, which is a little bit more formal process, but it does compel the doctor somewhat to make an appearance. The doctor is invited. They should appear. The board can ask more specific in-depth questions at that time. The outcome, options are still dismissal, letter of concern, and or disciplinary action at that time. But I just don't want the board to make a decision because they don't have enough information to just dismiss if that's not where you feel it's heading.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Whalen. Yeah, Dr. Cohen, if I might, I would be willing, if it's appropriate at this time, to move it to be tabled because of a concern that there was a clinical complaint that we don't know whether that was addressed, whether alternatives were looked at besides providing this meager prescription, as well as who informed the patient with a 60-day warranty period to get back to them in 6 months. So I feel it'd be reasonable to table this and to seek those particular answers, at least from the doctor.
You want to move it to informal interview then, Dr. Cohen? Is that what you're saying?
If I understood Ms. Whalen correctly, I'd like to move it to be just tabled and to seek that information without going to the next formal step, if that's appropriate.
Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Cohen, that's appropriate. If the board agrees with you, you could table it. I would just need specifics as to what the board wishes me to glean from Dr. Lewis.
Would you want
concerns or other?
Yeah, Ms. Whalen, this is Dr. Cohen. Would you want that in the motion, or once we get a second and the discussion or final voting, then to tell you specifically what we're looking for?
You could move to table it and ask staff to collect A, B, C, and D, whatever you wish, and then the board could vote on, or it would just be tabled at that time.
Okay. Well, I'd like to then put in A, B, C, and D, then I'll follow your lead. I would like to make a motion that the issue be tabled to the next meeting with instructions to ascertain from the doctor what things were done or discussed concerning possibly other causes of the nighttime glare, as well as an understanding of who gave the patient instructions to give it 6 months, which exceeded the warranty period.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. I don't know if you can hear me. My Zoom is acting very odd today, but you can also request that the doctor appear at the next board meeting if possible to answer questions of the board.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Baskin. It's Dr. Cohen, in light of what Dr. Brown said, I agree with him 100%. There are questions that we'd like to be able to ask, so I would include that in there for request that the doctor does appear to answer questions as well.
Okay, I have that noted. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Okay, so then we'll move forward to agenda item 8.
Wait, did we get a second? Do we need to vote?
Is there a second? Yes.
Madam President, Dr. Brown, I second it.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, so there's been a motion to table this complaint regarding Dr. Lewis Iyer number 202407 and a second requesting further information. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. Okay, and so then we'll move on to agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action on pending licensure by exam applications. Number one, Dr. Michael Flores. So we have a application for licensure from Dr. Flores, where there has been an extended gap between not only the start of school and the graduation of school, but also the completion of board exams following graduation of an accredited program. Dr. Flores, I know you're in attendance today. Would you like to take a moment and address the board?
You're unmuted, but we can't hear you, Dr. Flores. You might need to change your microphone. Oh, I think I heard you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you, everybody, for giving me this opportunity. It's very important to me, so I wanted to read a statement that I put together this morning. And so first, I would like to thank the board and Margaret and Fawn for giving me this opportunity to speak with you. I admire and respect your dedication and commitment to the profession of optometry, which I am excited and eager to be a productive member of as well. And I completely understand the concerns that you have, because what you want, which is to provide the best care for our patients, for our community, and our profession, is what I want as well. Therefore, the lapse of time from a daily clinic schedule and other things that have been mentioned is understandably concerning. But although it has been time spent, it has not been time wasted. And I just wanted to share that I do suffer from anxiety. And with therapy, I became aware that my default response to the anxiety was to freeze, in a sense. But I learned to think in healthier ways and to employ more helpful, sound coping strategies. And I am now able to move forward through anxious moments and channel the fear into excitement. And it's an excitement to do good for others. In a sense, by letting go of myself and instead to focus on the person in front of me, I'm able to escape the paralysis of the anxiety. And this metanoia, the shift of mind, which is give all for all and leave the one so you may enjoy the other, was the seed that took
deep roots and has allowed me to take my joy with me in times of suffering. And so I continue to move forward, never giving up. And I reached out to Dr. Feiss, the dean of the College of Optometry at Midwestern, which I attended, and to Dr. Esposito, a clinical professor at the college. And without hesitation, Dr. Feiss gave me access as an alumnus to the pre-clinic and virtual reality lab to practice with other students who were also preparing to take their board exams. And I also worked with and was guided by Dr. Esposito to get my clinical skills back in shape. And it wasn't easy, but I stayed the course. I studied my notes, clinical textbooks, and I practiced for months in the pre-clinic. And with hard work and dedication, I passed part three, and I immediately contacted the state board, passed the law exam, completed my application, and I am most definitely forever grateful to Drs. Feiss and Esposito and Midwestern and also Margaret and Fawn for all of their help in this process. And so again, I understand it and respect your concerns, and I hope that in this short period of time, I've been able to share a little bit about my journey, because of all I've been through and the healthy proactive steps that I've taken to improve myself, I feel confident and capable that I will serve my patients, the state of Arizona and optometry well. And so I come before you and humbly ask for an opportunity to provide the best care for my patients, my community, and my profession. And I am excited and eager to take any recommendations from the board to achieve this goal. And I just feel that in life, we don't know if we are in a Shakespearean comedy, tragedy, or both. We don't know how many lines we are going to get. And so all we can do is make sure that we speak the lines that we have well and always do the right thing. And this is my guiding principle. And so I just wanted to share this with you and thank you so much for this opportunity and for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Flores. So I'm going to open this up now for board discussion. And if the board members want to ask any questions of Dr. Flores, of course, that's always fine. But otherwise, our comments will be amongst ourselves. Would anyone like to open up discussion?
This is Dr. Mestros. Dr. Flores, I'd like to know what type of practice modality you are hoping to practice in the future.
I have...
We can't hear you very well.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have plans to go into the commercial setting, and I have I really do enjoy refraction and contact lenses, and of course the basic health. And so that is my plan.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have, Dr. Mestros again, do you have any feelings of anxiety thinking about like how many patients you'll see per day in a setting like that, for instance?
Well, I would say I have a low level that is probably normal, but and so I thought that as I get started, I may work part-time to get caught up with the flow and then go from there. But as far as saying that I feel anxious toward that, I would probably phrase it differently and say that I'm excited to take on the challenge, and I feel confident that I will adapt quickly.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll offer a few comments here and then pass it on. I have some concerns, and of course, Dr. Flores, I appreciate everything that you've said to us, and I sympathize with some of what you've had to deal with. Our job, of course, as board members is to always protect the public and to decide if a licensee is competent, meets the requirements, has the ability and experience, of course, to function and to do the job that they're licensed to do. So it's reasonable, I think, that if there's been a large gap, that some things may need to be tuned up. And if we were to issue licensure, then I would be most comfortable. I'm going to offer a plan, something that I think is to be considered, and then I'm going to let the other board members discuss what they think, of course. So seeing that there's been issue before passing exams and that there's been a time gap, I feel like some CE is probably indicated. And continuing education that has an exam at the end of it that shows a comprehension of the material presented would give me some peace of mind. I think that we may need to discuss as a board what areas of focus the CE should be on so that we felt like there was a level of competence entering into the work field. In addition to that, if there was some clinic work done with supervision, a supervising doctor, someone who could be asked questions and could provide guidance, just as a re-entry point, I think that sounds appropriate as well. And then in the event of practice, maybe a practice monitor for 6 months or so. Dr. Flores, the other board members or board members are aware of this, but you may not be. A practice monitor will usually just take a random sampling of charts and provide a summary of what was done. And if there was anything that the practice monitor felt like was inappropriate, it sort of flags it for us. And then they also present what they thought was done correctly. That would give us some ability to monitor to make sure that you were adjusting well and that this time gap hasn't restricted your ability to see patients and take care of patients in a good, thoughtful, and competent way. So those are my thoughts. And I think something like that would allow for a comfortable reentry, give us some peace of mind, and also give Dr. Flores some guidance that he might need. So those are my thoughts. I'm going to pass this along now, Dr. Brown. Do you have any thoughts on licensure for Dr. Flores?
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Dr. Flores, I appreciated your comments and compliment your resilience and determination. I'm grateful for the opportunity for us to review this. And Madam Chairman, I agree with your concerns and recommendations. I had kind of penciled up something similar. I hadn't thought of the CE, but I thought about putting a certain number of hours of stipulation or of supervision that within a certain amount of time. I really appreciated Dr. Esposito's letter, and she was careful to mention Dr. Flores' dedication, perseverance, and potential, but she did withhold any current condition or current abilities from her thing and recommended supervision. So I think some form of supervision monitoring. I'm not against CE. I do think a probationary period would be advisable. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Dr. Cohen? Thoughts?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohen. First, Dr. Flores, I commend you on your efforts and your perseverance, and very much I'm very moved by your candor in discussing. It's a difficult situation to discuss publicly, and appreciate your willingness to do so. I have one quick question for you, if you don't mind. When you describe many people do suffer from test anxiety, and therefore performance doesn't necessarily correlate with their abilities. But do you experience any anxiety that makes it difficult for you when you have engaged with say in clinic with a patient to be able to focus on what's going on that may affect your clinical rationale?
Hello, Dr. Cohen. Thank you for the great question. I would say that when I have been in clinic, I did not generally experience any type of anxiety that was debilitating in that way, because in those moments, in those real life moments, my focus is on the patient and not on myself, and I'm able to give them the care. And the anxiety doesn't necessarily have an impact in that situation.
Thank you, Dr. Flores. I think that that was my big concern about do you feel it spills over in other areas, because many people do have anxiety with tests and things. Dr. Flores has worked very, very hard to get to this point. I'd like very much to see him have the opportunity to practice, but our responsibility on the board is to protect the public, not to protect the profession. So I think that Dr. Moffitt's very thoughtful plan sounds good. The CE, which is just a different level of CE that has a test at the end of it, would be one. But I think the monitoring and the supervision over a short period of time to help Dr. Flores with that transition is an excellent idea, and I think I would support that very much. But allowing him to still be able to join our profession and to enjoy all that we do.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Dr. Mastores, any other comments?
I agree with everything, and I appreciate that you had a good plan, Dr. Moffitt.
Thank you, Dr. Mastores. So, Mr. Hamed, any comments here?
No comments, Dr. Moffitt. I do agree with your plan. I will support it. Actually, I think it's very thoughtful. And to Mr. Flores, thank you for being candid and also for be willing to do what it takes in order for you to enter the profession in the best way possible again.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde.
Dr. Moffitt, may I ask you a question? This is Dr. Cohen.
Yes.
In your proposal, I know you haven't formally put a motion out there yet, but in your proposal for the CE, obviously you're talking about CE that requires passing a test at the completion of each CE. Would this be in addition to the required hours, or this be a stipulation as part of the required hours for licensure?
So it would be part of the requirement for licensure. And I was thinking, and I haven't really sketched this out yet, I think we have to come up with this as a board, but I thought that there should be kind of a minimal component of some neuro, glaucoma, strabismus, retina, refraction, pediatrics. Any other? Because honestly, if we're saying, yes, you go out into the world, these are things you're going to run into. And so I think these refreshers help Dr. Flores succeed. As far as I'm concerned, this is helpful. This gives him some good information. We all practice and we see what we've run into on a daily basis. And so I think that we have to have kind of a baseline of what CE with exams should look like. And I'll say again, Dr. Flores, we're not trying to make it difficult for you. We're trying to make it good for you and good for the public. And so trying to walk that line, that's how I see this CE. So I think it should cover certain areas. And then the practice with supervision, like we discussed, and a practice monitor. And then at the end of that, Dr. Flores gets to just go on and work. So for a four-year absence from graduation, I think that this will assist him and also care for the public's needs, which is our role.
Dr. Moffitt, I thought it was a very thorough list. I don't know if you had contact lenses in there, but Dr. Flores has expressed.
Yes, that was on my list. I just didn't say it, but you're right, Dr. Cohen. It was on the list. Yep. I was just kind of getting it from memory. Yeah.
Yeah. He's expressed an interest that that's one area he might want to focus on. I think that would be good.
Maybe the supervision. I mean, maybe we could look for a practice that has heavy contact lens focus so that, you know, something like that could be, you know, there'd be assistance.
Yeah, if there is the supervision, the benefit, particularly since Dr. Flores mentioned that he may start out and gradually work his way in part-time, may allow time for him to have some time in another practice or supervision, something, so he may have the ability to do so if he starts part-time.
Yeah, great. So I think if we're going to move forward with this, then we also need to discuss, and Margaret, correct me please if I'm wrong, but then we need to discuss how many hours, right? We need to put an order together for how many hours of CE and then how many hours of supervision and how long practice monitor will be in effect.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, as much detail as possible is always good. You will need to basically lay out the parameters for clarity for both Dr. Flores and for any other parties involved, like the practice monitor or the supervisory optometrist. And, the order should be sort of self-ending, where once the requirements are met, he becomes licensed at that time, or, you have to decide if you're going to license him and then do the order. The continuing education, anything prior to licensure doesn't count towards renewal. I want to clarify that. I think Dr. Cohen, you may have asked that question a little bit earlier. So this is strictly a method for getting licensed at this time. So this is kind of the time to do it. This is the ground floor here. So you want to lay that out, Dr. Moffitt, in whatever terms that you want. There would be a probationary period, possibly. Mona can correct me if I'm wrong, but, so like you're giving him, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 30 days, whatever your time frame is, be sure to include that.
So, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Ms. Williams, Dr. Cohen. So the thing is saying this would be separate from the typical CE, even though Dr. Moffitt's proposal is a different level of CE because it involves taking an exam at the end of it. And am I correct that we would be approving his license with this probationary period as part of it, or only doing the license after these requirements are met?
Dr. Cohen, members of the board, Madam President, that is up to the board. This is kind of unprecedented from the standpoint of, when we don't have a person who is licensed in Arizona, we technically do not have jurisdiction or the ability to mandate them to do something. But because this is licensure, this is an application process, we do have an applicant who's willing to take some preliminary steps to be licensed. So the board could, offer the terms of, this type of order and say, once these are all completed, the board will grant licensure, as an option. Otherwise, it does carry a little bit different tone if the board has an order, unless it's a non-disciplinary order. Let me just delineate that. I don't imagine that the board is intending to do any kind of like disciplinary order, but those are the most common when we have licensure. So the board could grant the licensure and then have the order, and then there would need to be a probationary period of time for Dr. Flores to complete. The only issue with that is once you grant licensure, you've granted licensure. So it does get a little bit sticky at that point.
Yeah, so I'm confused, Margaret, because here's one of the things that I think. If we're going to offer a practice monitor as part of this, I suppose we could do this, and I'll toss this out. If we make the CE with exam a requirement and the observation with the supervising doctor a requirement of licensure, then we could say that for the first 6 months of licensure, there's a practice monitor in place. And then if we find any issues of concern based on the reports from the practice monitor, then we can call our own complaint against Dr. Flores if we need to. So that seems like a path to licensure to me that seems reasonable. Otherwise, he can't practice, have a practice monitor if he doesn't have a license to practice, right?
Well, for the practice monitor, are you talking about a practice monitor as in a direct supervisor, or are you talking to me? A practice monitor is someone who reviews records and
someone to pull random records and just give a monthly audit and put it to the board, so, like we have done before.
That would require a license. We wouldn't do that if the doctor wasn't licensed.
Is that a reasonable path that I've just offered to everybody? If we had a CE and we had supervision, we decide on what that looks like and then offered a license based on completion of that. But then for the first 6 months, he has a practice monitor in place and we review those records.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. Maybe I can provide some assistance. I think what I'm hearing from the board is that you would be offering a consent agreement that would be contingent upon Dr. Flores agreeing to the terms of it. The, as far as what you could do is you could grant the license and automatically suspend it. And during that period of suspension, have him complete all of the continuing education with exam so that you can ensure that he has completed that. I mean, that could, it sounds like there's quite a few hours. So whatever period of time the board would want to delineate, then after that, you could lift the suspension and then you can, I'm a little unclear about what you mean on supervision. If that's just shadowing somebody, I don't know that we could have an unlicensed individual whose license is suspended participate in any type of supervision with a licensee of the board. And as far as the practice monitor, after that period of suspension and he completed whatever terms you wanted, then his license would be placed on probation, you know, with the practice monitor. And if you would clarify what you mean by actual supervision, then that could be incorporated at that time. If Dr. Flores did not sign this agreement, his license would be denied. So that's where we are legally. Yes, Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Mona. I think on supervision, this is Dr. Brown. My picture is like an internship where you practice without a license under someone else's and you're supervised on every patient. That was my idea of supervision, but I don't know what Dr. Moffitt's was.
I completely agree. That's exactly what I see too. We practice without a license as preceptors and interns when we're training. And so he would just have a supervising doctor who signs off on his charts, but he would have the ability to see patients, to work in a clinic, and he would have someone offering him a little bit of oversight and help and supervision so that he gets some assistance there if he needs it. He might not. And they can supervise his work. It's good for both. So that's what I also had in mind.
Okay, Dr. Moffitt and Dr. Brown, that could not occur on a suspended license. There would have to be a license. And if the board wishes, we could go into executive session and have further discussion.
So I don't understand why that can't occur. I mean, I guess if it can't occur under consent agreement, then we need to come up with another plan. But it does occur in practice all of the time with supervision without a license. And so
they're in a school, but academic institution that permits it. This is somebody that's not associated with it. So unless you could craft a term that he could participate in some type of academic program in some clinic. I don't know, based on the letters that we did receive, I don't know if that's possible. But certainly a person without an active license cannot engage in the practice of optometry unless they have an active license. And again, should you wish to go into executive session to discuss this, that I would be available for them.
Well, is there another route then other than a consent agreement?
The consent agreement is the only offer that this board can do at this time. I mean, Dr. Flores could, if he wishes, maybe not proceed with that. Again, I would like to go into executive session.
Okay. Maybe one last comment. We'll just see if we can round this up. What if we offered the consent agreement and the timing is that first there are the hours completed, then the license is granted, then there's supervision with a supervising doctor, although he's responsible for his own license, he still has someone there to help. And then with the completion of those hours, he, once he starts practice, has a practice monitor, then he's working with an active license.
Well, he would be working with an active license as soon as, I mean, if
yes,
you went ahead and
see the patient.
Right, as soon as he satisfies if this is the direction that the board would like to go. And again, Dr. Moffitt, I feel really uncomfortable. I would prefer to go into executive session to have this discussion.
Okay. So, Margaret?
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice? And reviewing confidential records. We need a motion and a second, Dr. Moffitt.
This is Dr. Brown. I move that we go into executive session to discuss legal issues and confidential records.
Thank you.
Dr. Moffitt, I second.
Okay, so we will go into executive session. Board members, if you could.
We need a vote, Margaret.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, thank you.
Comment, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Carpenter? I'm sorry, Dr. Cohen.
I can change my name if you'd like.
I looked right at your name, but I still said Dr. Carpenter. Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so motion passes 6-0.
I sent a link to the board members, so if you'd please check your email and click on that link, we will see you in executive session. Make sure to stop your video and mute your, because I'm going to leave this other meeting up.
I'll start out. Dr. Flores, one of the things the board is really interested in understanding is if it would be possible for you to go back to the school and participate in a preceptorship, a one semester type preceptorship that we all do when we are finalizing our education. And so we would like to know if that's an option available to you and if it's something you would be interested in doing.
Hello?
We hear you.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for all your kind words and support and all of the ideas that have been put forward. I think are great ideas because I know it's for the good of everybody. And so, although I'm not 100% sure exactly what you mean, I will say that that I am willing to do whatever is needed for me to do, and so that is something that sounds like a good idea to me. Though I admit I am not 100% sure exactly what that means.
Let me see if I can clarify. So in all of our final year of school, we do an externship. We do rotations as an extern. And those are placements, right, that the school makes. And you work as a student under the supervision of a doctor. We are wondering if you could reach out to the school and say that the board is in your support for doing a externship, a one semester externship with a supervising doctor. We are wondering if that is an option that the school would make available to you, given your circumstances and that you're trying to apply for licensure. We would like to hear an answer to that question from the school.
Yes. Thank you for that. If the school was able to offer me such a thing, I would most definitely love to take advantage of that and do what the board would be asking me to do.
Okay, thank you. They might have some concerns, I guess, but we would be wondering what those concerns are and if there was a way that we could meet the concerns of the school and also the needs for you. So we're wondering if they have any suggested options as far as some supervisory, if there's some supervisory option available for you.
As far as does the school offer a program for somebody that has graduated already and needs to go through, like you said, a sort of rotation. I personally would have to ask the school if they offer such a thing. But I will say that if they did, I would gladly take advantage of that.
Okay. We would appreciate you looking into that. And we also would come together under circumstances to meet on this again sooner than our anticipated next meeting to see if there's any option of that available through the school.
Okay. And is there a way that somehow all of your concerns and questions and what you would like me to investigate, is there a way that could be sent to me, for example, in an email. So that way I can make sure to do everything that you would like and to do it correctly.
Certainly.
Madam President, members of the board, staff is happy to generate a letter, of course. We don't ever leave people hanging, if you will. We do everything in writing, Dr. Flores. So I will send you a letter outlining the board's request. That will give you kind of the parameters of what they are looking for. And that way you can present that in your search for answers.
Can I also mention, and I say this just as an individual board member, we didn't vote on this. This isn't the recommendation of the entire board, but you did hear the discussion regarding CE with exam. And one other area that you could consider looking into, at least, is brushing up on your neuro skills through continuing education. So these areas, I think, and anybody else, please jump in if you have an opinion. This is just my opinion. This is something that I would be looking for when we revisit this. But neuro, glaucoma, strabismus, retina, pediatrics, refraction, and contact lenses. These seem like some basic areas that a general, so not too specific, but a general re-education in those areas, I think, would be helpful. I'm just passing that along as my thoughts. So then I think that we need to vote if we're going to table this into a later date.
Ms. Dr. Cohn, I move that we table this issue pending information coming back from Dr. Flores to consider options that will be available. Is that sufficiently stated?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'll second. Further discussion?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohn. The only thing I want to say is, Dr. Flores, thank you so much for your willingness, and it shows your passion to be in the profession, that you're willing to do whatever's required. We all really want to see you succeed, and we're trying to balance that with our need to protect the public. But you're doing a great job, and we wish you all the best in being able to fulfill this and join our profession.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cohen, and thank you so much, everybody on the board. It really means a lot to me, and I will definitely do everything and anything that I need to for the public, for the profession, and my colleagues, and for myself. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Flores.
Was there a vote on that motion?
No, I'm sorry, there was.
Was there a second? I'm sorry. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so we had a motion and a second to table the consideration for Dr. Flores's license until we receive further information. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 6-0. All right, moving forward here, agenda item I.
Dr. Moffitt, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Dr. Cohen. I mentioned that I need to stay for this vote. Unfortunately, I do have to go. My son's getting married and there's rehearsals in the East Valley. But I apologize for not being able to stay for the entire meeting. But I applaud you and the board for such conscientious efforts today. I think we fulfilled our obligations in the work we've done so far. So I want to just mention that. And I apologize for having to leave.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Have fun.
What was that?
I said mazel tov.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let the record reflect, Dr. Cohen has left the meeting at 10:21 a.m.
This is Dr. Mestores. I also have a patient waiting, but I can stay as long as I can, but I just wanted to, if we can go fast.
Okay.
This is Sammy Hamed, Dr. Moffitt. I'm going to suggest anything we have to handle that that's pressing, let's do it now. Anything that needs to be tabled or that doesn't have to be handled, maybe we could do it for a future agenda.
I think we may have a complicated conversation coming up, but we can try to move through it and see. So let me move to agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on receipt of criminal background report related to initial licensure application approved under ARS 32-1730. So we had an application from Dr. Philip Barlow, and on that application, he responded no, that he had ever had an arrest or charge for a criminal offense. And then the DPS report came back. We approved his license. The DPS report came back, and there had been an arrest in the past. So the question is, at this point, do we have concerns about this? It seems that there has been a incorrect answer given to us on an application for licensure. And how do we want to proceed? Is there, do we feel there is any discipline required here or not? So I'll open that up to the board. Thoughts on that? Dr. Messer,
in the doctor's response, it seemed like he would have maybe talked about it had he thought that it was an issue, but it sounds like he just didn't realize that it would pop up and that it was a thing. So I kind of read it as it didn't bother me. It's something that happened when he was young and dumb. and I think had he thought that it would have gone through, he would have said something, but I wish he was here to talk to us.
He was here earlier. I'll say for my part, he was 22. And I know you, just like I, have sat through an application for licensure. And when you read that question, if you had ever been arrested as an adult, because 22 is an adult, I don't think I would have answered no. So it's a question of whether we think this requires follow-up, if it was deceitful or if it was not. I think I would have thought very carefully about answering that if it were me. That's my only thought on this. I have a hard time looking at this and thinking that it was a mistake. So. And I'm not saying we have to say or do anything. I'm just saying, when you read those questions, I know you guys have all done this just like I have. When you read that question, if you've been arrested in the past, I would have disclosed it. So it's not really necessarily about the severity of the infraction. It's more about the question of honesty with the application. Those are my thoughts. Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Dr. Moffitt. I don't think it was a mistake. I don't know what the past history of the board is on things like this. I don't know if this happens often. I don't know the history here, or I'm at a little bit of a loss. I'm sure it wasn't a mistake. We don't forget those things in our lives. And to what extent it rises, a 22-year-old mistake, not mistake, 22-year-old arrest with some lessons learned, it sounds like. So I don't know.
Do you think it warrants follow-up?
I'm comfortable if we do not.
Okay. Margaret, is there and I just asked this for informational purposes, could we issue a letter of concern regarding disclosure to the board?
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board. Yes. So as Dr. Moffitt pointed out earlier, this is a question on the application. It is driven by statute and subsequently in rule. I sent you all the portion of the rule where the question exists. And it's an integrity issue. When you think about the application process, you want to ensure that all applicants are being truthful and, presenting themselves good or bad, whatever that means. The board is not here to judge anybody personally. We are here to see if someone is safe to practice. You know, was the disclosure, a potential issue? Does the doctor have an ongoing? That's why we asked the other supporting questions about, if they have any other issues, regarding addiction and things like that. So historically, the board has done several different things. They have chosen not to take action. They have issued letters of concern, and they have also issued disciplinary actions. This is a situation where, unfortunately, the board, in good faith, issued the license under ARS 321730, which is our fingerprinting law, that says if the board does not have any reason to believe that there is a criminal background, they can issue the license. The board did that because there was no disclosure by the applicant. So I just want you to keep that in mind as well.
Reading the question to us also, Margaret, that the doctor answered. Would you mind reading the terminology of the question just so that everyone's clear what the question was and what the answer is?
Yes, let me pull that up. Really need to practice my indexing here. I'm sorry. No, that's okay.
All the time.
I have my statutes and rules pulled up. Let me just pull up the question.
If I may, Dr. Brown here, while Margaret pulls that up, I appreciate those comments, Margaret, and reminding us that our duty is to follow the statutes and not our thoughts and feelings. So thank you.
Of course. So it's in rule on page 66 of your booklet, if you have the booklet, under letter F, has the licensee or the question asks, have you ever been convicted of, pled guilty or no contest to, or entered into diversion in lieu of prosecution for any criminal offense in any jurisdiction of the United States or foreign country? And if so, the name of the jurisdiction, date of the offense, charged offense for which convicted, pled guilty or no contest, and the current status.
Mm-hmm. And he entered, well, I guess we don't want to get into specifics.
Madam Chair. So Dr. Barlow answered no to that question. Theoretically, his answer should have been yes. Here's the scoop. Pursuant to the rule, it's very clear. All he would have had to do was disclose it. The board would have reviewed it and probably moved on based on the previous discussion where, you know, sometimes the age of things and the age of the person at the time something happened, there's been no other occurrences, you know, it wouldn't be an issue. So.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Hammond.
Thank you. This is Margaret, if we were to look at the issue of discipline, considering the issue of integrity here now is coming into question, what are our options for discipline as a board?
The option today, if you wanted to issue disciplinary action, would be a consent agreement. Basically, the doctor would be acknowledging that he did not truthfully answer that question as required under the rule, and it would be a disciplinary action. He would sign that. If the doctor doesn't want to sign a consent agreement, the board would most likely be required to open a complaint to investigate, which, I mean, there's a minimal investigation. We have the information we need, but in order to issue some kind of other disciplinary action, such as a decree of censure.
For purposes of the board discussion, could we issue a fine?
Let me look at our civil penalties. I'm not sure.
So I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think a letter of concern is going to do it, personally, in my opinion. I wouldn't vote for that. I think it needs to be a little more severe, if you will.
Okay, no problem. So I'm looking at ARS 321743, civil penalties. If you look at, so this does fall under 321743, as I stated previously. It would be violating any of the rules by adopted by the board pursuant to this chapter. That particular question is in rule, as I've stated. So it would be under A11. Mm-hmm. That's the what will give us authority to discipline. And the civil penalty is one of the options, I believe.
Sometimes I think hitting someone in the pocketbook leaves an impression.
Something they won't forget either, Dr. Mavitt.
Under letter A of that section, Madam President, members of the board, it does say after notice, after notice and hearing by the board, they can impose a civil penalty. So I think if you wanted to do a civil penalty, you would have to go through the hearing process. So with a consent agreement, probably not.
Okay. But we can't issue a fine with a consent agreement, or we can.
You cannot.
Cannot. So we could do an order for CE. This is an option available to us. We could issue a letter of concern with an option of CE, just a letter of concern, a consent agreement. And in the consent agreement, what can we impose? What are our options there?
The consent agreement would include, before I speak out of turn, one moment.
I just really quickly, if I could make a comment, Dr. Mastores, I guess what I'm making my basis on is what he said to us in his response. And I think the fact that he said he had had numerous background checks, that I think that's what made him not say, we're not able to talk to him right now, but I think what he said is that he's had background checks prior and he was under the impression that it was not going to be part of it because he had already had other background checks. So I guess I'm sympathizing with him a little bit in the way that he explained himself. But again, we didn't get to talk to him, so it's hard to say.
So thank you, Dr. Mastores. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cut you off. Madam President, members of the board, I think in the consent agreement, we could issue a letter of reprimand. This is kind of an older practice. So Ms. Baskin, if you want to put any words in there, we could issue a letter of reprimand and do a civil penalty at that time. But normally that's done when the person is still an applicant and they're not a licensee. So I'm feeling like since Dr. Barlow is a current licensee, I still feel like we can't do a civil penalty unless he is granted a hearing. Now he could, not sign the consent agreement. That's his option. And then it would go to hearing where the board could then issue a decree of censure as an action. I think if you're looking at continuing education, Dr. Moffitt, I'm not sure what that would be in regarding this issue per se.
I'm just thinking of options available. I'm trying to discuss them so that we can hone in maybe on an agreement.
Yeah, we do have the non-disciplinary order for continuing education, which is also an option. But again, I'm not quite sure what the board, I just haven't thought about it is all I'm saying. Ethics. I mean, if you have something in mind, then.
Yeah, I would think ethics, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an option, yes.
Well, so I'm sort of under the impression, Dr. Stewart, yes.
Dr. Moffitt, ethics, yeah.
Ethics, okay. Go ahead, Ms. Baskin.
I'm sorry. I'm struggling with Zoom today. This is hard. But yes, Dr. Moffitt, just to answer one of your questions, the board could issue a non-disciplinary order for CE, and what other boards have done in this area, it could be in ethics, 3 hours of ethics, and that is definitely an option. And in that non-disciplinary order, you would indicate the reason why. So that would be providing the licensee with also the basis for it and what the board thinks is necessary to remediate it.
Okay.
Right. Because what it states in your law is issue a non-disciplinary order requiring the licensee to complete a prescribed number of hours of continuing education in an area or areas prescribed by the board to provide the licensee with the necessary understanding of current development, skills, procedures, or treatments. And I believe that would include, kind of their ethical obligations.
Okay.
Should the board wish to do that?
I just want to kind of quickly ask the board members then if this sort of satisfies their concerns or if they don't agree with that. So Dr. Brown, let's start with you. And I'm just getting a feel for your thoughts. Do you think a letter of concern, non-disciplinary, but with a CE order addresses the concerns with this?
I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Ms. Galan, do you think you haven't said much? What do you think?
I think it's a good idea as well.
Okay. Dr. Mastores?
I'm in.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, how do you
I can accept it.
Okay.
I can accept it.
All right. So then I would make a motion that we issue a letter of concern with an order of 5 continuing education credits in ethics to Dr. Barlow regarding his failure to disclose a previous arrest his previous arrest record on his licensure application to the board.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All right. So we've had a motion and a second. Let's vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye, so motion passes 5-0.
Dr. Moffitt, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. I don't believe that the question asked for an arrest. I believe it asked for the conviction. So would you mean for failing to disclose his criminal conviction?
Or entering into entering into an agreement, correct? Because I think that was in the terminology.
Right, he did enter into a plea. He did enter into an agreement. Yes, yes, it was a guilty plea.
Okay, so should we back up and address agenda item I, Jonathan Schoenfeld?
Yes, please.
Okay, so review discussion and possible action on pending licensure for endorsement application, Dr. Jonathan Schoenfeld. There was a history of a medical malpractice claim with no disciplinary action taken by the Ohio State Board. Any concerns regarding granting licensure for endorsement with Dr. Schoenfeld? I'll state for the record, I have none. Dr. Brown, any concerns?
20-year-old case, it seems to be resolved. I have none.
Okay. Dr. Mastores?
Dr. Mastores, I have none.
Ms. Galan?
None.
Mr. Hamed?
None.
Okay, great. Would someone like to offer a motion?
Dr. Brown, I'll move that we grant license through endorsement to Dr. Jonathan Schoenfeld.
Great. Is there a second?
Dr. Mastores, I'll second.
Thank you. So we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Jonathan Schoenfeld's application for licensure by endorsement. Any further discussion? Okay, so we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. So agenda item K, review discussion and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports, request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. So number one, number two, number three, it looks like Pardeep Dhillon is applicant number one, Jonathan Schoenfeld, number two, number three, Dustin Deutsch. Any concern with the board members approving these applications for licensure awaiting their fingerprint reports? Please state it for the record. Dr. Brown, any concerns?
No concerns.
Dr. Mastores?
No concerns.
Galan?
No concern.
Dr. Hamed?
No concerns or objections.
Okay, I have no concerns also. Would someone like to make a motion?
Go ahead, sorry.
No, you can do it, Dr. Brown. I would move that we accept the license applications for Pardeep Dhillon, Jonathan Schoenfeld, and Dustin Deutsch, awaiting fingerprint reports. Is there a second?
I'll second, Dr. Brown.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Agenda item L, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. The following licensees were approved October 4th, 23 through November 29th, 2023. Taylor Coons, Melanie Cho, and Christine Fahmy. Agenda item M, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of testing centers for proctoring of the jurisprudence exam pursuant to AAC R4-21-203C. There are two listed sites here that need approval. Number one, Blue Earth County Library in Mankato, Minnesota. And number two, Wayne County Schools Career Center in Smithville, Ohio. Any concerns regarding approval of these two locations as a testing center for the jurisprudence exam? Dr. Brown?
Can I make a motion?
Oh, I think you can. Not yet. You should maybe all say.
Okay. I have no concerns. Sorry.
Okay. Dr. Mastores, any comments?
No concerns or comments.
Okay. Ms. Galan?
No concerns.
And Mr. Hamed?
No concerns. No concerns or comments.
Okay. I have no concerns either. Someone like to offer a motion?
Dr. Brown, I move we accept these test sites, Blue Earth County Library in Mankato, Minnesota, and Wayne County Schools Career Center in Smithville, Ohio.
Dr. Mastores, I'll second.
Thank you for proctoring of the jurisprudence exam. Any further discussion? Okay, so we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. Executive Director's report, agenda item N.
Thank you, Madam President. I will be very quick since I know everyone's running short on time. Our budget, as of October 31st, that's the last report I have. Our beginning cash balance was $579,399 with an ending cash balance of $563,638. 33.33% of our fiscal year has elapsed. As a reminder, we have fiscal year from July 1st to June 30th. The board's spending is at 32.33% of the spending of the budget. So we're right on track for our budget. Staff activities, item two on mine. The total current active licensees is 1,424. I thought you'd find it interesting that those holding the oral pharmaceutical agent is 1,333 of those 1,424. As a reminder, in 2001, when our law changed, everyone was grandfathered in. They did not have to get the highest scope, which is the PA. So we have 21 who hold only TPA, 18 who hold only DPA. And thankfully, we no longer have people that have no prescribing authority. There was a few of the OGs that still were around, but they've since retired. We have licensed 98 new people this calendar year. Excuse me, these are calendar year numbers, by the way. We usually do fiscal, but not for this. I did calendar year. The board did not deny any licenses this year. So far, we have renewed 446 licensees, and 29 people have gone into void status just due to non-renewal. They decided not to keep their Arizona license. As you know, the board is mandated to meet 6 times per year. We have had 10 meetings so far this year, including today's meeting. So we're on schedule, and I feel like we are actively and accurately serving the public with our number of board meetings. Are there any future agenda items? Oh, I'm sorry. Legislation update. I actually didn't really have one because we did not submit any bills for this session. Don Isaacson, who's the lobbyist for the AZOA, reached out to me, and we kind of kept missing each other. I didn't hear of any bills that the AZOA is doing. So to my knowledge, we don't have any bills in session yet, but this is just the preliminary. All bills had to be filed by the middle of this month if they were doing the sunrise process. So we'll see what happens in the upcoming session, but optometry board does not have any bills. Are there any future agenda items on anyone's mind that they would like to see? Okay, future board meeting dates. I initially had February 2nd. I think we kind of talked about it the last meeting, but we certainly can meet January 5th if the board feels like, if we do not meet prior for other reasons, our next regularly scheduled meeting would be either January 5th or February 2nd. I believe Ms. Baskin had a conflict with the January board meeting. I didn't know if anybody else did. Dr. Moffitt, it's your call.
I thought we decided on the 16th of February also.
Excuse me. Yes, we did.
Okay.
My apologies. Yes.
I have that.
Okay. So we can leave it at that. I just didn't know if anyone wanted to meet in January.
Okay. I think we should wait and see. That's my thought on January.
Okay. So February 16th will be our next meeting, and I'll send out an email. And that concludes my report, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Agenda item O, call to the public. Any members of the public that would like to address the board? This is an opportunity. Okay. Agenda item P, motion to adjourn. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Dr. Mastroes, I motion to adjourn.
Is there a second? I'll second. any further discussion? Okay, we've had a motion to adjourn. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Galan?
Aye.
Dr. Brown?
Aye.
Dr. Mastroes?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 5-0. This concludes this December 1st, 2023 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry.
Thank you
all so much.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Bye. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Bye.